This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. Joining me as usual, my co-host, Naz Marchese. How are you this morning, Naz?
Good, Wally. How are you?
Good. Also joining us this morning, former Washington Capitol, former Toronto Maple Leaf, leaping Lou Franceschetti. Good morning, Lou. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm doing fine.
Anyways, to let our listeners know, we're all doing this show remotely today for lots of different reasons, and we're going to have our producer, Owen, try to resolve our technological challenges. So we'll certainly, Owen, do your best today. And if we cut out at any point in time due to cell signals, we'll just have to reconnect. Gentlemen, it's an important day in Canada. It's Grey Cup Sunday. It's something we certainly should talk about. It's in some places in the country, in most places in the country, it's considered a cultural institution, a part of the fabric of Canada. Unfortunately, this year, the Toronto Argonauts aren't in it. We would have hoped they would have been in it. They got defeated by the Montreal Alouettes last Sunday. A fantastic season for the Argos, but they're not there. But it's the Grey Cup's down in Hamilton tonight, and it's the Montreal Alouettes and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. We would love to have seen the double blue there, but they're not. Naz, I'd like to take this opportunity. We obviously should have a quick discussion. Grey Cup Sunday, such an important part of sports in Canada. Let's go back down memory lane, Naz. What particular Grey Cup over the course of time do you remember, either fondly or for other different reasons?
I think the 71 Grey Cup with Joe Theismann was the one I remember the most, and it was pretty bad for all Argo fans at that time, Wally.
Yeah, certainly that one takes us back. Lou, which one, which particular Grey Cup or Grey Cups over the course of time do you look back with some memories?
Well, I think I go back to the, I'm not sure if it's the late 60s or 70s, when Ottawa had those great teams.
Yeah,
with Russ Jackson, Whit Tucker, I can't remember the gentleman's first name. Atkins is one of the receivers.
Margene Atkins.
Tony Gabriel.
Gabriel came a little bit later.
As a linebacker, because that's, you know, I was a kid growing up, and I would say I was a big CFL fan. Back then, before I decided to take a different route and play hockey, so I didn't follow it much after that.
Yeah, I have a couple of Grey Cups that that stick out in my memory. Obviously, the 71 Grey Cup. Who can forget that one? As Naz said, Joe Theismann was the quarterback. I think, Naz, correct me if I'm wrong, did Greg Barton get some snaps in that game too?
I think he did.
Yeah, I think Leo sort of, during that season, sort of mixed it up between Greg Barton and Joe Theismann. And, of course, there's two central plays in that game that are have been stuck in Toronto Argos fans' minds for a lifetime. It was the punt, the interception return by Tricky Dick Thornton, where he ran it back, and instead of zigging right, I think he zigged left, and he got tackled rather than running it in for a touchdown. And then Argos had the game right there. I don't know where they were, maybe 15-yard line, 20-yard line. I don't know exactly where they were. And Leon McQuay fumbled. And man, that and I remember when we talked about that with Peter Martin on the show, Naz, you'll probably recall this. We had Peter Martin in studio. Peter Martin, of course, was a great Argo from the late 60s, early 70s, linebacker, University of Western grad, I think Winston Churchill High School in Toronto. And we had him in studio. I remember we had Bill Simons in studio, who was also on that team. And we were talking about that. I think it was on the exact 50th anniversary, if I'm not mistaken, Naz, or pretty close. Or it was the exact anniversary of that game. And I remember Peter Martin sort of choking up in studio a little bit when we were talking about that. And it was, you know, 50 years later, and it still hurt, Naz.
Do you know what play I remember the most there? Was the Harry Abos kick out of bounds around the 50-yard line on the punt return. He fumbled and he kicked it out of bounds. I remember that as one of the key plays also.
Yeah, that came after the fumble, and then the Stampeders, they were playing. They were two and out. Then they had to punt. There was still time left in the game.
There's a minute and a half.
As I'm talking about this, I can picture it in my mind. I mean, it's amazing the memories you carry so many years later. Mm-hmm. But I can picture Harry Abos kicking that ball. He was the punt returner. I can picture him kicking it out of bounds. And we were all looking at each other saying, what the hell did he just do? Because if I recall correctly, I don't know if that turned the ball over to the Stampeders or effectively ended the game. I don't recall correctly, but it sort of killed whatever prospect the Argos had of trying to mount a little run right at the end of the game because they were running out of time. That who can forget that one? Going back to loose points about the Ottawa Rough Riders and the great Ottawa Rough Rider teams of the late 60s. And, you know, you brought up a couple of names there, Lou Margene Atkins. Let me bring up another one for you. It was Ottawa against the Calgary Stampeders. I think it was the 68 Grey Cup, if I'm not mistaken. I think 69 was against Saskatchewan. And that was the Ronnie Stewart Grey Cup. But the 68 Grey Cup was at Exhibition Stadium. And there was a moment in that game where Vic Washington, I'm sure you remember him, Lou. They gave him the ball, and he fumbled it. He fumbled it. But the ball hit the turf, and it bounced right back up into his hands. And he ran it like for an 80-yard touchdown. And the Rough Riders, Russ Jackson, was the great, great Canadian quarterback of the 1960s, McMaster grad. And the Ottawa Rough Riders ended up winning that Grey Cup, and they ended up winning the Grey Cup the year after. And then Ronnie Stewart and Russ Jackson retired, and then the rest of it was history. Lou, very quickly before we go to break, I'm sure you remember that Vic Washington special run.
I really do, and it's funny, like you say, there's certain things that you did yesterday that you can't remember what you did, but memories like that, and I can't remember which Super Bowl was the actual Mud Bowl,
the Grey Cup?
Yeah, Grey Cup, sorry.
I think the Mud Bowl was back in the early 50s, that was before our time.
Okay, because I remember watching one game that was actually, I'm not sure if it was a big downpour or like the field was really, really sloppy. And it's just little things like that stand out. And I can remember like it happened yesterday.
Yeah, certainly. There was, I think, 65 may have been a Mud Bowl. I think that was the Ticats and the Bombers, if I'm not mistaken. Ticats and Bombers used to fight each other all the time back in the 50s and 60s. And then there was the one at Exhibition Stadium. I think it was 70 might have been, where, you know, the Owls were in it, and they just replaced the turf, and they were Sonny Wade. Remember old Sonny Wade, Naz?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Was pulling sod off the turf. Who can forget that? So certainly a lot of Grey Cup memories. A great day in Canada. There's a lot of Grey Cup parties today. Don't know if it's what it was in the old days, but today is Grey Cup Sunday. Who cares? Let's enjoy the Grey Cup. Interestingly enough, I couldn't believe that I had to read it twice, and I hope I read it correctly. This is the first time in the history of the CFL that the Montreal Alouettes and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have actually faced off in a Grey Cup. If that's in fact correct, and I'm pretty sure I read that correctly, that's pretty astounding. See, you know, the CFL's been around for over 100 years, and there's only 9 teams. And the first time the Montreal Alouettes and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have ever faced off in a Grey Cup. Wow, that's pretty pretty wild when you think of the odds of that. Naz, before we take it to break, let's size up today's game. The Owls in Winnipeg. Winnipeg has had a great team for the last while. The Owls are on a little bit of a run. Big performance against the favorite Toronto Argonauts. Who's gonna win today's Grey Cup? And what's your sets?
I think Montreal's got a real shot here today because they're playing so well, and they won like 8 in a row, including the playoff game last week. So I like the Alouettes, but not by much. 2 points.
You like the Owls? That's an interesting one. Louis, what's your sense of today's game?
I'm going to say Winnipeg 31-21.
That's a nice little pick. I'm gonna fall on Naz's side on this one. I'm going for the hot team, Montreal Alouettes. I think they haven't lost in 8 games, however long it's been. Looked pretty good against the Argonauts last week. They're on a roll in the history of the Grey Cup in the last few years as the team that's hot going into the playoffs. Doesn't matter where you finished in the regular season, but the team that's hot that goes into the playoffs seems to pull these games out. So I kind of like the Owls. I'll go with a 25-17 score, Montreal Alouettes. Quickly before we go to break, guys, there's a game going on right now. The Toronto Maple Leafs and the Minnesota Wild. I think just before we went to air, it was at the end of the first period. Leafs are ahead 2-1. If you're at home listening and you weren't aware of that, Leafs are on TV right now playing the Minnesota Wild. They're over in Switzerland in Sweden. And what's the current update on that score, Naz?
It's still 2-1 for Toronto.
Still 2-1. Anyways, we hope to keep it going. And later on in the hour, we'll be talking to TSN's Carlo Colaiacovo. We'll break down the Buffalo Bills. We'll break down the Toronto Maple Leafs. Bills have a game on Monday night that we're going to add to my list of games that will have seared in my memory for a long time. I had 13 seconds in burnt into my sports psyche. Now I have 12 men on the field burned into my sports psyche. Buffalo Bills, man, they just they know how to disappoint their fans. But season isn't over. We're going to talk to Carlo Colaiacovo. When we come back from break, we're going to talk to Mintinks, John Amendola. It was a fabulously successful sports card expo last weekend in Toronto, and who better than our own Minting, John Amendola, to bring us up to speed on the sports card market. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared,
"We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best.
At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza, stone-baked. The traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth. Search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work. whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Any team worth cheering for has fans worth listening to. A super fan of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour is MDF Mechanical, who sends a big shout-out to Naz and Wally on 10 years of memorable sports talk. MDF Mechanical speaks from experience in stating that a decade is a milestone worth marking. They themselves are celebrating over 35 years in the plumbing, HVAC, and mechanical design build contracting business. From MDF Mechanical to Naz and Wally, the best sports team on radio, thank you for 10 years of calling it the way you see it.
The only thing I love more than sports is sports radio. Take it away, boys. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 on downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM. We also stream on the internet, www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, Mint Inc.'s John Amendola. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you this morning?
Good. Thanks for getting up early for us, John. I know that Saturday nights you do a really late show. Might be a good opportunity for you to tell our listeners exactly what you do Saturday nights.
Yes, Saturday nights and the five other nights of the week, we had a live streaming channel where we talk about sports, and more importantly, we rip open packs of cards all night long for our viewers. Oh, I think I lost you there.
Yeah, I've got a bit of a bad connection this morning, unfortunately. We'll keep working on it. John, are you still there?
There we go. You got me?
Yeah, I got you. Yeah. Anyways, John, pretty remarkable sports card expo last weekend. Tell us all about it.
Okay, well, it was unbelievable. There was upwards of 15,000-20,000 people there just on the Saturday. It was 4 days. It was the biggest show Canada's ever seen. We had PSA grading on site. It was an absolute, I don't even know the right word to describe it. That's how amazing it was. It was more than I ever could have expected. The crowd was wild. We had the privilege of having PSA on site grading for the first time in Canada. And we had a customer bring in, your listeners will love this, a few gems from the 1952 Topps baseball set.
Oh my God.
Yes.
That's Mickey Mantle, isn't it?
Well, we had an Eddie Matthews rookie, two Willie Mays rookies, and not one, not two, but three Mickey Mantle rookies.
How'd they pop up, these Mantle rookies, and what kind of shape were they?
They were a couple of customers, and they were their fathers and their collection, and the gentleman had passed away a while ago, and I guess they just saw an article somewhere and they remembered they had these cards. And let me tell you, the cards graded, the Mantles were 1 and 1.5. So you're thinking, oh my, a one, right? Like, let's give you perspective. A 10 is 35 million US. Okay. There's three of them known to exist. So a PSA 1.5 Mickey Mantle is still a $40,000 card.
Wow.
So these five or six cards totaled out to about a buck and a half.
Wow. What when you're grading a Mantle, because this is, you know, you get our listenership here and they're all thinking about their cards. When you're grading something at 1.5, what's the difference between a 10, a mint or gem mint or whatever you call it, and a 1.5? What's the difference?
Well, in the case of Mickey Mantle, about 30 million. From the car itself, you're looking.
I was more interested in the condition of the car.
You're looking at things like the corners, the edges. Like if you remember, you know, things like corners, edges, and centerings. But the 52 tops, like the surface of the cards, the coloring. So eye appeal is very important. You may have a 1.5 that looks nicer than another 1.5 because maybe you're, you know, the picture's nicer, but the corners. So a lot of folks when they're buying, you know, I mean, let's call it what it is. You know, if you're spending that kind of money on a card, it's art before it's a piece of cardboard. So whether it's paint on a canvas or ink on cardboard, a lot of the price they fluctuate a lot based on eye appeal, but there is only 3 perfect 10s recorded. I think only 2 of them have ever been found. One of them is owned, the gentleman that owns the Arizona Diamondbacks, his name has escaped me at the moment, but he has one of the most expensive baseball card collections in the world. 10 cards. They put a great big book PSA put out. He's got 10 cards that are worth $100 million. And you're talking about Hank Aaron, PSA 10, Mickey Mantle, PSA 10, Jackie Robinson, PSA 10, like the top Babe Ruth, like the top, and he's got the best of the best. So there's a lot to be said about the condition of those old cards.
Nez, are you there?
I'm here.
Over to you. Go ahead.
Mike Tyson and Ric Flair, how popular were they last weekend?
So Nez, Saturday saw more people than 5 years ago the whole Expo weekend. It was unbelievable. Ric Flair and Mike Tyson, they were like, the lineups were incredible. The Expo, big kudos to Steve Menzies and his team because, man, the talent that they had. On top of Tyson and Flair, they had Dougie Gilmore, Max Domi, Matthew Knies, and Joseph Wall there all at the same time. So you have Ric Flair, Mike Tyson, and then 4 Leafs in crazy Leafland. Like, it was an outstanding day. It was great. We paid the bills on Saturday.
that's good to know. Lou,
Lou's here. Lou, get this. Lou. I did a grading for a good buddy of mine in Walters, and he had a Gordie Howe. Here's another one for you guys. The Gordie Howe came back a 3, 10,000 US.
Wow. Wow.
It's one of the grails.
Lou, I'll turn it over to you. Any questions or comments for John?
John, it's funny that you tell me that Ric Flair's there. 92, I was retired from hockey, went down to Jacksonville, Florida, took a picture with myself, my son Daniel, who was 1 year old at the time, Red Rooster, and Arn Anderson, right on the beach in Jacksonville, and we were all buffed. And that was right after my playing days, but that's awesome. To Ric Flair, and I'm still looking for him. I'm trying to get together with him so he can sign it because I had it blown up to an 8x10.
But that's awesome.
Anyway, you're talking about those cards. Where were the Ty Cobb cards with the 3 cards you mentioned with Mickey Mantle?
The T206. I'm pretty sure that he's still. There was a Mickey Mantle 9.5 that sold for about $12 million in the last year, and that's the record now. The 10's never been sold, so the most expensive. There is a Ty Cobb, the one you're talking about, the T206, the cigarette card. Everybody knows there was only a few printed. Ty was very much an anti-tobacco guy. You're still in the millions for that card. That's the one, if you remember, Bruce McNall and Wayne Gretzky owned right way back in around the same time you were hanging out on the beach with Ric Flair. And it's right there, but there's a card up right now for auction, and I'll let Wally know how it finishes so we can tell the viewers. It's I want to say it's 1916, don't quote me on this, or 1913 or 1919, but it's a Babe Ruth card that's never been for sale before. I had never even seen it. Piedmont, very cool card. It's like black and red. If you Google it right now, if you're a listener and you want to know, just Google Babe Ruth card for sale. They're saying that it could do some damage and set a new record. So I'm going to be really interested to see how that finishes up this month. Yeah, pretty sure it's on Heritage Auctions or Leland.
We're talking to John Amendola. John Amendola is the owner of Mintink Sports Cards, one of the top sports cards impresarios in Canada, if not the world, John. You've got all kinds of things going on. You're dealing with all kinds of different card companies. So congratulations. Your business is doing fantastic.
Thank you for that.
Our listeners always ask this question, and I always ask this question. By the way, if the Jean Béliveau's gone up in price, I've got a vested interest in him, if you haven't noticed.
Béliveau is a big one. He's another one. So there you go. Your 51 Parkies are rocking.
I'm feeling a lot better this morning now, John. But listeners always ask this question. We always hear these incredible numbers about some of these. And from what I can tell, from what you're telling me, the sports card market's not like the real estate market these days. It's still rocking and rolling, and last weekend certainly displayed that. But for, you know, guys like us, myself, we grew up 50s, 60s. We had those cards down in the basement. When we hear these crazy, obviously, you know, if it's one, you know, if they've been beat up, but are the old cards at a 1.5 or a 2, however you grade them, with beat up corners and a couple of wrinkles on them, are they actually worth money?
So like I said, some of them, absolutely. The lot we had for our friend there was 13 cards. We ended up sending 8 of them, and they all came back 1s, 2s, 3s, 4s. There was a Gretzky in there that came a 7, which is obviously quite nice. But, you know, Bobby Orr was a 4, 7,000. So to give you context, these cards were from the 50s, some Parkies and a few Gordie Howe Tops cards from the early 60s. There was a Sawchuk in there, a Howe and an Orr, and then about 6 Bobby Orr cards. 3,000 to grade, and we got back a bunch of 1s and 2s, Wally, that are worth about 34,000. So it really depends on the players. And you mentioned the market. The market, like all other markets, is no different. It's not, you know, Gordie Howe today is a little less expensive than he was 6 months ago because there's a little bit less disposal. But at the end of the day, you know, like houses and car stocks, there's still always lots of trading, lots of buying and selling. And like any other market, it's very cyclical. It can be very, you know, speculative. So at the end of the day, the best thing to really do is to collect what you love, as opposed to looking at it from an investment point of view. But yeah, like, you know, the binder of cards that I'm finally getting around to looking through for you, like, you know, there's a few gems in there that we're going to grade for sure. Especially the vintage stuff, the you get into the 50s, 60s and prior, and it's just, you know, stayed the test of time. They're not making any more Gordie Howe rookies, bottom line.
Naz?
Dion, how is he doing on the market?
Keon is another great one. He's not quite there with some of the other names we've mentioned, but I mean, especially around Leafland, just given everything, you know, I think you guys have had him on the show more times than he's been in the ACC in the last 30 or 40 years. So, I mean, I know that's starting to change now too, the more he, you know, he comes around and sort of gets back on the scene. So a lot of that is what kind of creates that demand too. When there's a story, you know, when there's a story to it, when these players post-career have some value in pop culture, if you will, you know, but guys like Michael Jordan or Tiger Woods, they're still always talked about a lot. So as long as you remain top of mind, or again, we get into this legendary status, like the Bobby Orrs and the Wayne Gretzky's and the Babe Ruths of the world.
That's wild.
The demand is crazy. But even the modern stuff, we sell cards all the time, 500, 2,000, 5,000, and $1 and all the way up. So there really is, the cool thing about the hobby is there's something for everybody. You'll love this. There's even pickleball cards now. So, I mean, there really, you know, really is something for, and not everything's millions of dollars, you know. When you're ready to shop for your grandkids, come see us. The Pokemon cards start at $6.99. You know, hockey cards starting packs at $5 or $10. So there's it's very affordable. But yes, at the end of the day, you can definitely spend a lot of money, and instead of that new Corvette, we can get you a nice new Gordie Howe card.
Yeah, without getting into specific details, John, perhaps it might be an opportune moment to, you know, our listeners are out there. They've got cards. They're buying cards. They're on eBay. They're you know, different Kijiji, wherever these cards are sold. But there's something that they should be careful about. There's some hot stuff out there, isn't it? The hot, what I mean.
Yeah, you got to be. Yeah, so
be careful, you know, right?
Yeah, we've had some issues, as you know. We won't get into it too much, but we've definitely experienced some theft along the way. But you know the cool thing about the cards, especially if we're talking about some of the cards we're talking about, and this is why you have to get your cards graded for two reasons. And this was a great example with our friend. The two reasons were, number one, he didn't know that he had $30,000 or $40,000 worth of cards in these 8 pieces. So from an insurance point of view, his basement gets a flood. And you know, these raw cards hanging out in a box, you're not getting your money. You're not getting the even remotely close to the value. So from an insurance point of view, it's crucial. And then onto the theft side, which kind of coincides with it all, is once the cards are graded, they're attached with a serial number and high-res photos that are cataloged. So yes, you could crack the slab open and try to resell the card. It just slows them down a little bit. And then some of the more modern stuff is actually numbered. So if you steal my Sidney Crosby card, but it's Sidney Crosby number 7 out of 50, I mean, it doesn't matter how many times you try to reholster the card, reslab the card, it's always still going to be stamped number 7 of 50. So there's definitely some ways, lots of deterrents, but I highly recommend, if you are whether you're a collector today, or if you are like our friend sitting on a basement full of what, you know, a treasure trove, you're looking to leave it for your, you know, your estate, for your family, for the generations to come, you may want to consider the grading approach, because like I said, you know, from keep point of view, encapsulation, but really to deter theft, and from an insurance point of view, you must have your high-end collectibles graded and registered with an authority in the space.
Anyways, we've been talking to John Amendola. John, thanks so much for joining us to give our listeners an idea. I mean, we have a lot of listeners that are sitting on cards or active in the market or interested in getting active in the market, and you're one of the go-to guys for sports cards in Canada, yeah, if not around the world. Please fill our listeners in and all the areas.
Yeah, we have, so we can help you with everything: buying, selling, appraising, grading, storage, vault service. You can literally drop the cards off to us, and you know, we'll get back to you. Full review service. We have 2 locations in the GTA, 1 downtown at Avenue and Davenport, 1 up in Vaughan. We've just we're just about to finish building out a 3rd location, which is an event center. Yeah, you can find us online, mintink.ca. Yeah, find us online, Google us, give us a call. You can reach out to me directly. I'd love to help you. Our Toronto store, Aton, the manager, actually specializes in vintage. So if you're ever in the area, pop in. He'd love to pour you a coffee and chat about your old gems.
Awesome stuff. John Amendola. John, thanks so much.
Thanks again, boys. Nobody I'd rather wake up for on a Sunday morning than you fellas. You guys have a great day. I'm going back to bed. Take care, guys.
Thanks, John Amendola. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to have TSN's Carlo Koliakovo. We're going to have a little bit of Buffalo Bills chat and perhaps some Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared,
"We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best.
At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian, authentically Italian.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer.
Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
Any team worth cheering for has fans worth listening to. A super fan of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour is MDF Mechanical, who sends a big shout-out to Naz and Wally on 10 years of memorable sports talk. MDF Mechanical speaks from experience in stating that a decade is a milestone worth marking. They themselves are celebrating over 35 years in the plumbing, HVAC, and mechanical design build contracting business. From MDF Mechanical to Naz and Wally, the best sports team on radio, thank you for 10 years of calling it the way you see it.
Are they ever wrong about sports? I can answer that in two words. Impossible. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740, downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM. Also streaming on the internet at zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour our good friend, TSN's Carlo Koliakovo. Carlo, good morning. How are you?
Morning, guys. Doing great. I was up bright and early. Finally home. Get to catch some of this Leafs game right now.
Yeah, sorry we kept you holding a few minutes, but your good friend John Amendola used up a couple of minutes of your time this morning. So
He can talk.
Yeah, he can talk, especially when the sports card market is going nuts. Absolutely,
yeah.
Guys. I don't have a TV in front of me. Can somebody give me an update on the Leafs game?
It is 2-1 right now. 2-1 Maple okay. Leafs with 3 minutes left in the second.
Okay, fantastic. Carlo, we got Naz in with us today. We've got Lou with us. So it's the four guys here today. Buffalo Bills. You know, it took me a while, and I hadn't gotten 13 seconds out of my psyche, and now I've got to add 12 men to the laundry list of Bills disappointments. Aside from the fact that they're 5-5, Carlo, This has not been a good season for the Bills, who were supposed Super Bowl contenders. Nothing I've seen in a while here suggests that they're remotely close to being a Super Bowl contender. What's most disconcerting about the Bills' performance is, for lack of a better term, the regression of Josh Allen. I know that you're a big Bills fan. You break it down almost every week on your show on TSN, which I highly encourage our listeners to listen to first thing in the morning, Monday to Friday. Carlo, we're Bills fans. What's going on, and should we be hopeful in any way? Carlo? Oh, we must have lost him. Naz, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, we must have lost Carlo. I'll get our producer to see if he can reconnect with him. Louis, you still there?
I'm here. I've got my opinion on what's going on with the Bills. But,
I feel sorry for you guys
that have invested so much into this. You know what? I really think that there's a major problem in that locker room. And Stephon Diggs is probably in the middle of it. And he's calling out Josh Allen because he's not seeing the ball as much as he wants. And he's crying about it.
Naz, your assessment.
They really suffered in the last little while. I mean, they start off so slow. They come on in at the end, but they start so slow, Wally. But it's really disturbing, and I think Ken Dorsey was used as a scapegoat in this, for sure.
Well, somebody had to take the fall. I don't like the type of game Josh Allen has been playing for a while. His decision making, Naz. He was an all world quarterback for a couple of years. I mean, when he broke into the league, his first year, there was rookies got to learn. But man, his turnovers the last, and it's not even so much the turnovers. It's the passes that he throws. He seems to have taken a step back for a guy. I mean, our expectations, maybe this is a better way of looking at it. Our expectations of him are so high. He's proved that he can be one of the best quarterbacks in the league, if not the best quarterback in the league. You look at some of the games he plays. I mean, that game against Kansas City a few years back, for lack of a better term, the 13-second game. I mean, he didn't make a mistake the entire game. Basically, every time Bills had the ball, he ran them up the field for a touchdown. I'm told we have Carlo back on the line. Carlo, you back with us?
I'm back, boys. Sorry, I got disconnected there. Apologies.
No problem. It's live radio, and we're remotely, and we're all subject to the vagaries of the cellular networks. And I've been fighting it this morning too, Carlo. Myself. My cell signal's been going in and out, but since the last break, my producer seems to have figured it out. Carlo, I don't know if you heard what we're asking you right at the end. We're for a team that's supposed to be a Super Bowl contender. We've now added 12 to 13 as two numbers that burn from a Buffalo Bills point of view. I mean, the last three, four weeks of the Bills, for lack of a better term, have been horrendous.
Yeah.
Decision-making, errors, coaching decisions. I don't know where to start, so I'll turn it over to you, Carlo.
Yeah, I wish I knew where to start, too. But, look, it's been a very frustrating season for the Bills, and obviously fans of the Bills, like myself and yourself, it's hard to explain, but should I say I'm surprised? Absolutely not. This is something that, you go back to the first game of the season against the Jets, and, the excitement of a new season is when a new season starts, you're hoping to see change in a group. And what I saw in that first week loss to the Jets was a lot of carryover from last year, where this team really took a turn for the worse in the last 4 weeks of the season, where they just got really arrogant with their play calling. They got really sloppy with their play. And you hope that through a summer of an evaluation, through a summer of a bad taste in your mouth, losing the way they did to Cincinnati, and, there would be some changes in the philosophy and even the mindset of this group. And it's just been getting worse. I mean, the only good game they played this year was against the Miami Dolphins. And I factor that in just because I don't think Miami's as good as their record says that they are. They can't beat any good teams. And for the Bills, I mean, I go back to the 13 seconds against Kansas City where this team showed exactly who they really are. And they're a team that crumbles, led by their coaching staff in big moments. And, what we've seen in this week, you look at the four primetime games they played this year, the game one of the season against the Jets, the Giants game, the Tampa Bay game, and the Monday night game. The Cincinnati game. You can even say the Tampa game and the Monday night game against Denver. All on national TV, all on the national stage, and all the one consistent thing you saw in all those games was how many mistakes this team makes. And because of that, they're not a Super Bowl contender to me. And I've been begging for change with this team. We saw the first step of it with Dorsey. And until this team decides that they want to make more changes, as a fan of this Buffalo Bills team, I have zero faith that they're going to make the playoffs, and I have zero faith that they're a Super Bowl contender.
Ness?
Carlo, they shut down the run for the quarterback. Is that the team's figuring him out or what, Josh Allen?
Well, I think it's self-inflicted. You heard Sean McDermott in the offseason saying that they wanted to create an offense this year that didn't involve Josh Allen running as much as he did. And I get the concept of that. You want to protect him from injuries, but Josh Allen has to understand that one of his greatest weapons as a quarterback is that he's a dual threat guy. He has to run the ball. He has to be a threat to run the ball, but he also has to be smart enough to know that he shouldn't be taking the contact that he does when he does run the ball. So the fact that they've completely eliminated that, I mean, I listened to Dan Orlovsky and I really trust a lot of what he says. They're a predictable offense and teams have adjusted with that. And when you become predictable, you start to look for, you know, bigger plays, you know, quicker. You want to look for that quick score offense, but teams have caught up to it, and which has allowed them to be exposed for the mistakes that they're making. So my frustration with Dorsey is that he hasn't been able to unlock Josh Allen's strengths. He's created a complicated offense, you know, within their own strategy. And it has allowed teams to defend him, and it has allowed teams to shut them down. I've always said, hey, look at the way the Bills score. The Bills score and they play their best offense when they play the hurry up and when Josh Allen's a threat to run. Until they get back to that, you know, you're going to see the same struggles that they continue to have. I hope Joe Brady can find a way to unlock that, but the biggest mistake this organization made is thought that they could enter a Super Bowl window letting Brian Daboll go. Brian Daboll was the only guy that got the best football out of Josh Allen. And it's unfortunate they let him go. You see what he did with Daniel Jones. He allowed him to make $40 million a year. And now the spotlight's on McDermott. I mean, McDermott's a guy that came in as a defensive genius. He took over the defensive play calling this year, and he's been an absolute disaster with those calls. And I go back to the New England game. You had a chance to win the game, even though you didn't play your best, and you let Mac Jones in that offense go down in a 2-minute drill and score a touchdown on you. To me, that explains everything about what's wrong with this team.
Louis?
Carlo, we know obviously the problems that the Bills have had. Why is Ken Dorsey put at the forefront of this? Only because last year's offense was probably in the top five in all the NFL. Why hasn't McDermott taken a lot more brunt of the bad stuff than Dorsey getting fired?
Well, it's a great question that I wish I had the answer, because I've always said every problem with this team lies within the head coach. The head coach has to take responsibility for everything. And you saw with the changes they made last year, Leslie Frazier, they let him walk because Sean McDermott wanted to call the defensive play calls. Well, it's unfortunate they dealt with injuries, because earlier on in the year they were really good. But in big moments, the defensive play calling has been horrible. So the mistake this organization made, too, is they locked up both McDermott and Brandon Bean till 2027. So it's hard to imagine them making a change at coaching. But, you know, you can change all the pieces around them until the philosophy with the guy that is in charge changes. It's hard to imagine anything to have success. So, look, this is a big game today against the Jets. You know, they already lost to this team, but all the eyes right now are going to be pointed straight at McDermott, and he has to find a way to get this team back into his control and get this team playing at a Super Bowl contender level, because no Super Bowl contending team makes as many mistakes as the Buffalo Bills have made this year. And that falls squarely on the head coach.
Yeah, Carlo, I think there's one thing here, Carlo. Mr. Pegula will not wait for tomorrow to happen. They're going into a brand new stadium. And I don't think if these things don't turn around this year, or if there's any inclination that this is going to be a slow start next year, Mr. McDermott is going to be gone, and Pegula is going to he'll bite on the rest of his contract.
Yeah, we'll see. Look, I'm not a guy that advocates for people to get fired. I don't like doing that in this industry, but you know, when there's clearly this many problems with a team that's supposed to be better than it is, you got to start asking the questions, and the questions got to be asked. The hard questions got to start to be asked to the head coach.
Yeah, it's not even the physical mistakes. It's the mental mistakes that drive you crazy.
12 men on the field? Like, come on.
After the guy misses the field goal, which was a gift.
Denver was supposed to be the team in scramble mode because they kneeled and let the clock run out, and they needed to get their field goal unit on the field, and the Bills were the ones that had the penalty. Like, come on, that falls squarely on the coaching staff for not keeping the team prepared.
And I go back to the Tampa game. That's a game they won that they made every effort to give away in the last minute and a half.
I agree. Well, even the Giants. Look at the Giants game.
The Giants game. I mean, I haven't seen this in a Sean McDermott team in Buffalo since he's been there. I find some of the mental mistakes. I shake my head.
I'm with you.
I just shake my head. Anyways, Carlo, we only got a few minutes left here. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't take advantage of your insights and passion on another front. Of course, we're talking about the blue and white, the Toronto Maple Leafs over in Sweden with blue helmets on. Are the Leafs where they need to be? Nylander's playing all world. He's certainly made himself. His start to this season is probably going to earn him an extra $30-40 million over the course of his career with his next signing. Leafs on defense and goaltending are still the question marks. Let's get your analysis of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, he asked, are they where they need to be? I think they're exactly who I thought they were going to be coming into the season, a team that was going to be really good offensively, a team that was going to be a really good regular season team, but a team that wasn't very good on defense. So are they where they need to be? Absolutely not. There's no way they can even sniff at the idea that this defense is good enough to help them win in the playoffs. And I'm confident that Brad Cheerleading and management know that as well. And it's going to take some time throughout this season to help find the pieces that's going to make this group better. Am I concerned about them in that? Absolutely not. I think Samsonov is fully capable of winning them hockey games. I'm a big fan of Joseph Woll and what he can grow into with this team and with his career. But any good championship caliber team hides a lot of their deficiencies when they play a good brand of team defense because they have good defensemen. The Leafs aren't there yet. It's pretty simple. But they can outscore a lot of their issues, which they have done so far. So I'm not surprised to see them where they are right now. And I anticipate it's going to get better through the season. I'm not the overreaction type of guy when it comes to the Maple Leafs, like sort of allow things to play out, because this is something that has been very familiar with this group year after year, especially early on in the season, especially when they have this many new players to integrate into the lineup year after year. So you mentioned Nylander. I've been blown away impressed, and I'll be the first to admit that I was willing to give up on this guy 2-3 years ago, because the frustration of watching him play, knowing that he had this type of skill set, but what bothered me and everybody else was the lack of compete and the lack of consistency. And I give him a ton of credit coming into the season that he's coming into with all the noise around his situation. Again, the way he's been able to elevate a game and round out his game to be more of a complete player that he is, it's pretty amazing. Yeah, I would put him right up there as one of the best players in the league. And you know, if he keeps this up, and I know he's on a hot streak right now, I mean, there's no reason why he can't be.
Oh, I think we lost Carlo again. Naz, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, I think we lost Carlo, and we only have 30 seconds left in any event. So we're gonna thank him for joining us. Naz, we're talking about Nylander just when he was finishing. I think Nylander's, I call him Mr. Sudden Death. I don't think there's anybody in the league that's better on 3-on-3 hockey. So, it's great to have him on the team. Keep it going. I think Carlo sort of nailed it. Defense, although I still think goaltending is a bit of a concern. Anyways, it's 10 o'clock, Naz. We're done. The producer's telling us our time's up, and I always give you the last word.
Will Ryan Reeves play another game as a Leaf? There, I'll leave that with you, okay?
Interesting question. Louis, thank you so much for joining us. To all our listeners, Owen, thanks for keeping us on the air. I'm sure we've had some challenges with some difficult cell signals this morning. So thanks for your outstanding work. To all our listeners, have a fantastic week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.